The Large Nerdron Collider podcast is a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey everybody, welcome to The Large Nerdron Collider, the podcast that's all about the geeky things happening in the world around us and how very excited we are about it. I am Ariel Kasten, and with me, as always, is Holly Jolly Jonathan Strickland.
Jabba ruled with fear. I will rule with party favors.
Habba Jabba. Maybe not Holly Jolly. Habba Jabba Jonathan Strickland. There we go.
That's more my style. I'm Habba Jabba. Have a Habba Jabba Christmas. Hey, Ariel.
Yes, Jonathan.
I got a question for you. Okay, this one's just a simple choice. Mm-hmm. Marvel or DC? We're not just talking films here. We're talking in general, Marvel or DC?
DC.
Explain yourself and pray make it improbable.
And this is where I change my mind. DC, because growing up, I always loved watching like Batman. I mean, I watched like X-Men, New Class and things like that. But my favorite cartoons were Batman, the animated series, Justice League, the second Justice League cartoon. So that's kind of what I connected with first. I mean, as I've grown up with the Marvel movies, obviously I'm leaning towards Marvel now, but I think DC always has my first love because that's what I grew up on. And also, like, even coming into adulthood, like the Teen Titans commercial was adorable and things like that. There's a Young Justice cartoon out now that I actually quite like. So, it's mainly because of cartoons. As far as comics go, I don't have a favorite comic verse, but like comic book verse, but in the media that I consume, it's DC. I am guessing you are also DC.
Image Comics all the way. I'm going really? The third choice. I didn't know. I'm just kidding. You know what? It is funny because like presenting that sort of choice, I do feel like it's a false dichotomy because I think most people probably have the stuff they like on both, right? Like they mm-hmm. don't, I'm sure there are hardcore fans who, just like any other fandom, they love what they love and they hate everything else. I'm sure there are those people. I think when it comes to comics, I was a DC guy. I was never really like, I remember reading, you know, Batman comics. I remember reading the Death of Superman saga. I had all those comics. I had, I read through the Justice League International and Justice League Europe, comics that a friend of mine had. I didn't have as many Marvel comics. Oddly enough, the Marvel comics I had were like, What If? They were all the, they weren't the main storyline comics. When it comes to movies, I mostly prefer Marvel. There are a couple of DC films, like the original, the 1978 Superman movie is still one of my favorite. It's one of my favorite superhero movies of all time. It's absolutely corny and ridiculous, and it is so sincere that it almost hurts, but I genuinely love it. So, more modern movies, it's mostly the Marvel stuff. So yeah, I kind of feel the same way. I don't think, if you made me choose, I think I would probably choose Marvel just because I feel like recently I've much preferred the stuff I've consumed from Marvel than from DC. We've talked at length about how the DC Cinematic Universe is one that I do not like very much. You'd have to go back a few movies for me to get to some DC movies that I actually really enjoyed. I liked Wonder Woman okay.
It was okay.
Yeah, I think Wonder Woman was the best out of the films I've seen in the DC universe. The second, Birds of Prey, the second Suicide Squad film had its moments, but seem like such a zany one-off that it's hard to even group it with anything else. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of my answer too. But
here's the thing. I think you were not kidding with Image Comics, because that's Bone, and we all know that's your favoritest of all the favorites.
I mean, there are a lot of great titles that came out of Image. But Bone is phenomenal. It's just a great fantasy story, let alone a great comic. We've got some news. In fact, we got enough news for two full segments today before we get to our mashup. And our first one is to talk a little bit about a trailer for the Peanuts special, Auld Lang Syne, which is the Apple TV Peanuts special. We saw a little teaser for it before where Charlie Brown says that his goal is to finish at least one of his New Year's resolutions before the year is over. And that seemed like that was kind of the thrust of the episode. But this trailer makes it sound like it's that Charlie Brown's going to be kind of a supporting character.
Yeah, this one, it looks like it's featuring on Lucy. She's throwing a big New Year's Eve party. Her grandma doesn't come and she thinks it's her fault. And so, I don't know, watching the trailer, for me, once I got past the fact that Charlie Brown's voice didn't sound exactly like Charlie Brown in my head, I realized that it's probably the same kid actor who did him in the movie a few years back. So it is the current Charlie Brown. I've got something stuck in my head. That it's like a Lucy redemption story is kind of what it looked like from the trailer to me.
Yeah. Also, it was interesting to see a cartoon where Lucy is on the receiving end of some of the abuse, because usually it's Charlie mm-hmm. Brown who gets almost all the abuse, with some of the other characters getting a lighter load of it. Lucy almost always comes out scot-free, with the exception of eventually getting kissed by Snoopy and saying that mm-hmm. she's got dog germs. But apart from that, you don't usually see Lucy get, you know, any kind of abuse. And this cartoon seems like that's going to be a little different, which is interesting. I don't have any problem with it at all, in that I think, you know, it's fun to explore new stuff. You don't want to just make the same specials over and over. Mm-hmm. And, the animation I thought looked cute. And if I had Apple TV, I'm sure I'd watch it.
It's got all of the Snoopy siblings. I also do not have Apple TV, though I'm probably going to get it so I can watch like Schmigadoon and Foundation and Ted Lasso.
I do want to see those too. Yeah, those are like... This is the part of the streaming services that is the worst, right? Where you discover that there are some properties that you probably would really enjoy, but the only way to do it is to subscribe to yet another streaming service. Ugh.
I mean, it's fine if you are good at like canceling one before buying the next one and then canceling that one before you buy the first one again, because there's not like an upcharge to cancel and resubscribe at this point. I hope there never is, because that's the only way I can do it is, okay, season two of Picard is coming out, so now I'll cancel Apple TV and get Paramount back.
See, whatnot. Yeah. Whereas I'm just like, I don't have the energy. I will stick with what I have. In fact, I've been thinking about, like I said, I keep saying it, I think about canceling Netflix simply because I haven't watched anything on it in a really long time. And I've got stuff like Amazon Prime and HBO Max and Disney Plus. And I'm like, well, maybe I should just delete, cancel out of Netflix for a while and come back to it when I want to.
You should cancel for a while, but come back, because it does have some really good, it's got a lot of stuff on it that is not my cup of tea, but it does have some good things. Lock and Key. I really enjoyed the first two episodes of Cowboy Bebop, even though like reviews are saying that it's a little bit uneven in tone. It felt very Cowboy Bebop noir to me. So there are good things. If you find the time to watch them.
Yeah. It's just that making the time, right? Well, mm-hmm. moving on, one thing I know I will make time for, despite the fact that I was so ready to just be done with this character, and yet they pull me back in, is the Book of Boba Fett. We got another, it's called a trailer, but I call it a teaser. Another teaser for that. It's not that much different from what we've seen before. We do get some more looks at some of the aliens, but it's the same message that I was jokingly alluding to in the opening about Jabba ruled with fear. I intend to rule with respect. But and party favors. It looks good.
Yeah, it does. I like the actor who plays Boba Fett. I like the tertiary squad that he's got as well. It looks good. Yeah, the teaser really didn't show too much new I'm kind of surprised it even made any news at all. But whereas like Breaking Bad is showing as Mr. Chips turns into Scarface, this kind of feels like watching Scarface turn into Mr. Chips. I don't know.
I mean, he's still going to be a crime lord. It's just the question of whether or not he'll be a kinder, gentler crime lord.
A crime lord.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Our other story we want to cover in this segment is that Mr. Beast, the guy that I mostly know as the dude who likes to give away huge amounts of money and make videos about it.
And runs Phantom Kitchen burger joints.
And I think I would like his videos more if he didn't seem so pleased with himself about giving money away. Like, I want the focus to be more on the people who receive the money and less on, look how awesome I am for giving the money. Yeah. But hey, you know, people are getting like nice donations and stuff. I shouldn't really complain. Anyway, he's behind a real life version of the Squid Game competition. So if you are one of the few people out there who have not watched Squid Game, the general premise is that people who are really down on their luck end up being contacted to participate in these games that are based off of children's games, things like Tug of War, except it turns out there are lethal consequences if you lose said game, and that each round it gets whittled down more and more, sort of battle royale style. Mm-hmm. Well, this sounds like it's going to have 456 people competing for cash, and that they will similarly be playing these kinds of games, but presumably the losers will not be killed.
Yeah, yeah. Instead of being killed, they have like, I guess, fake blood packs that are actually kind of brown. It just kind of looks like some muddy water exploded on their chest, that when they fail a challenge, it explodes. And from watching the trailer, it looks like they're just like the orange suit guys with the circle, triangle, square faces might be the ones triggering those packs. So it, like, they walk up, and if they saw you move on red light, green light, they will point their little
remote control thingy.
Remote control, yeah, and set it off. So I guess if you're real sneaky,
it makes your heart poop.
It makes your heart poop. That's kind of what it looks like. And also, you don't get 45.6 billion Korean dollars. You get $456,000, but that's still nothing to turn your nose up at.
Yeah, no, if someone offered me, you know, just shy of $500,000, I'd be like, I'm listening.
Yeah.
I know I wouldn't make it like past round one in any sort of game. I love games. I am bad at them, and I have accepted this.
Upon hearing the premise, I was like, this is horrible. There should not be a show about this. If you've listened to our show long enough, you know that I don't really like life imitating art on things like The Purge or an actual Squid Games. But watching the trailer for the show or the clip from the show, it looks like the contestants are just having a lot of fun. So I'm okay with it.
It makes me think of like other classic, sort of the obstacle course style games that were a big hit, the stuff that came originally out of Japan and then made their way over. So everything from the ninja games to
like Wipeout,
which was another great example that, you know, like that style of game just seems like something that really connects with people. Like I always loved, I really loved watching people who are really good at those things. I just like to, I admired that level of skill and agility and strength and everything. And occasionally, like, you see ones that are goofy where people get eliminated in spectacular fashion, but no one's like hurt or anything. I love those too.
And then every once in a while you watch somebody wipe out and you're like, I am certain that hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. There are times where you're like, there's no way that didn't sting at least a little. Well, something that's going to sting us a little is that we need to go to a break. But when we come back, we're going to cover a few more news stories and then stick around. We got ourselves a heck of a mashup coming up at the end of this episode.
So I really liked your... segue into the break, Jonathan. Mm-hmm. And coming out of this segue, I've got nothing so clever, exception of another news story. And this news story is that we're getting a Gorillaz movie on Netflix.
Yeah, as in the animated band, you know. And you know what, Ariel? I gotta say, this news really makes me feel good.
Are you just warming up your chops for your mashup later, Jonathan?
Hey, no spoilers. Yeah, So yeah, it's Gorillaz, obviously, like great songs like Clint Eastwood and that's the one I always go for because that's the one that I think is like that's my go-to. But Feel Good,
all the other ones.
Well, it's funny because I'm like I have their albums and for some reason none of their songs are jumping to my mind. They are fantastic. I love Gorillaz, right? I've never seen they've performed in Atlanta. I've never gotten tickets to see them. And I had pretty much written off any ability to ever really watch it because you know it's one of those interesting projects where it's kind of a rotating roster, if you will, of people who have worked with the folks behind the characters of the Gorillaz. Mm-hmm. And so the band has never been like a single lineup throughout its history. It's been lots of different people taking part in it. But
vaguely Daft Punky.
Kinda, yeah. Or like Death Clock from Metalocalypse. Mm-hmm. Like when they came out to play, they would have the animated version of the characters playing on a screen while real world musicians are playing on the stage. But yeah, we're getting an animated film. In fact, this is not the first time this has been attempted. There have been a couple of attempts to bring Gorillaz to either the big or small screen, but those never panned out. So this is a promising sign. They've partnered with Netflix, and it seems like at least the initial discussions have been going well.
Yeah, I mean, previously, I feel like Netflix is the right choice because, as we mentioned, Netflix does a lot of various kinds of projects. And previously they had been working with DreamWorks and DreamWorks is like, this is very expensive and it's just too dark for us. So Netflix doesn't have a problem going there. So I think it's the right venue.
Yeah. And also, I mean, like it's again, a mark on how the entertainment industry has truly transformed over the last decade, right? Like, mm-hmm. 10 years ago, you wouldn't imagine that an internet streaming service would be behind some of the most compelling TV and movies. But now that's what we were talking about before the break too, is that mm-hmm. that's the reality. Now we've got streaming services that are, you know, various streaming services that have created incredibly compelling stuff from Ted Lasso to, you know, the WandaVision, like mm-hmm. the Succession. Well, that's really HBO, but it's on HBO Max.
I mean, that is a streaming service now too. So,
yeah. So, I mean, we're seeing that all across the board and it's, I would say that HBO was kind of a groundbreaker in that because it was a cable channel that was doing mm-hmm. that sort of stuff when really before it was just these big established TV studios mm-hmm. or movie studios.
HBO, and we've seen the Cinemax, Showtime and Stars were the first four, like,
yeah. Well, and Cinemax was essentially a subsidy of HBO. So yeah, it's been interesting to see that. And I do think that this is the best chance for us to get something that is true to whatever the vision is for the creators of the band.
I agree. Something else I never would have expected 10 years ago would be that Ridley Scott would be a crazy old man screaming at the sky, as you so aptly put it earlier, Jonathan.
Right, yeah. Old man yells at cloud.
Yeah, yeah. Because he's upset. He thinks that his movie, The Last Duel, didn't do well because millennials are too connected to their cell phones, don't want to watch anything that they can't watch on their cell phones. For instance, like his Blade Runner or Aliens show that's going to be coming up on Hulu. but it's I don't think that's the problem.
No, it doesn't ring true for me because we've already seen other movies perform well at the box office. And these were movies that appealed to younger generations, including, and I say younger generations with millennials. I mean, millennials are in their 30s and older now. Mm-hmm. I just happen to be Gen X. So I'm I'm of a generation from before that. But, you know, this argument that millennials are so connected to their smartphones that that's the only way they want to consume media just doesn't ring true, because we've seen box office hits already. I mean, they're not nearly the levels that they were pre-pandemic, but we have seen movies succeed at the box office, and clearly millennials were among the people who were going to see them. So perhaps the more accurate thing to say is that The Last Duel didn't strike a chord with younger audiences, and they just didn't turn out to see the movie. For those who don't know, The Last Duel is a movie that is about, it's based off a real thing that happened in history about the last trial by combat that was allowed in France in the medieval period.
And the movie has Adam Driver and then Matt Damon and Ben Affleck in mullets. Which is what turned me off from the movie, because, like, content-wise and actor-wise, it should have been right up my alley. But those
I honestly, I couldn't, I just can't, look, I'm not saying that Matt Damon's a bad actor. He's not. He's a great actor. I cannot envision Matt Damon as a medieval French knight. It just does not, it doesn't even come close. Adam Driver is a stretch.
Yeah,
Ben Affleck, but he's barely, like, he's playing a supporting character. So
I mean, but Star Wars is space Shakespeare anyhow. So Adam Driver, I can get behind. I know I have some friends who are just tired of him, but I think he fits into that weird medieval look for me. It's really interesting because I know you watch Hot Ones, and so do I. And Matt, did you watch the Matt Damon interview on Hot Ones, Jonathan?
Yeah.
Where he talked about how slice of life movies or situational movies are no longer what bring people to the box office. So it's a content change. People want to go to the movie theater to watch something that's big and visually spectacular, but not necessarily something like Cider House Rules or, you know, Good Will Hunting anymore.
The way I feel about it is that there's still a place for those kinds of stories too. It's just, there's no reason necessarily for them to go to the big screen. Like, the big screen has more and more become that you need to see this here because it's a spectacle and you just won't be able to replicate that at home.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's a smaller, more intimate story, then you can presumably watch it at home and still get a lot out of it. Now, I get the directors have vision and they don't want that vision to be compromised, and they don't want people to go and experience the film in a way that they look at as being inferior to what they intended. I totally understand that and respect that, but it doesn't matter if that's not what the audience wants to do, right? The directors can want it as hard as they wish. I wish for a gold Cadillac. Doesn't mean I got one. So I just got a deal.
I don't know what you'd do with one anyhow, Jonathan, other than sell it.
Sell it. You know how much gold is worth? I mean, come on, a Cadillac of gold, that'd be like billions.
But it also, billions, I like that. I mean, but it also goes to, like, the budget. So, like, I'm sure The Last Duel was a super high budget movie. And if you release that on Netflix, you know, like A Marriage Story or some of the other more relatable stories that come out on streaming as opposed to in the theater, you're not going to get the return on your investment. So it is a hard dance that producers and investors and movie theaters are all having to play. I understand his frustration, but, like, I agree with you. I don't feel that it's streaming's fault necessarily. I don't feel that it's, I feel like, you know, maybe it would have done better on streaming. I feel like it's probably partially the pandemic's fault because things are still all wackadoo from that. So.
Well, and also, like, it's not like it was designed to be a big budget hack and slash film, which, not that I'm saying it should have been. I don't think it should have been. I think that would have cheapened the whole purpose of trying to tell this true and compelling story if you turn it into, you know, a big sword and, you know, not sword and sorcery, but, you know, big sword fantasy battle type thing. That would have been a betrayal of the source material. So it's not like I would want them to go that way, but that's really the only way I would see people looking at that and saying, oh, I need to go see that in the theater. I just think, you know, it's like people's tastes change, generational tastes change. And it doesn't have anything to do with, can I watch it on my smartphone? I just feel like that was the most off base comment.
So, yeah. So, I mean, I guess he could still be mad at millennials for not having interest in history.
Come on. Like, I think a lot of millennials, and I think this is a totally valid point of view, is they're like, yeah, you know what? I'm kind of tired of watching stories about white guys disagreeing with each other. Don't really care. like I get that too, man.
yeah. I had a good segue, but we've since left it. So I'm just going to go into our next story, which is we might be getting a Zorro 2.0, which...
This is killing me, but please explain what Zorro 2.0 is.
Zorro 2.0 is going to be a story where Zorro is a modern day hacker, where he is actually an undocumented hacker known as Z0RR0.
Everything you just said made me throw up in my mouth like 8 times.
I'm not done yet. While fighting back against a secret government unit that attacked his mother, he discovers a high-tech conspiracy that threatens not only his family, but the world. So,
does he leave just one single uppercase Z on every system that he infiltrates?
Maybe he actually physically hacks things. He breaks into mainframes, slashes wires, and then ties them sword. Into a Z formation. I mean, I'd watch that.
I get the idea, like the article that Ariel linked to talks about how, you know, movie studios have this tendency to latch on to known intellectual properties, particularly known IPs that are in the public domain, so you don't have to pay anybody to use them. And it's why we occasionally get these resurgences of iconic characters like Robin Hood or King Arthur. Or Zorro in this case. Mm-hmm. And that's a large part of the reason why these things will happen. Because you start to ask yourself, well, why would you even bother with the Zorro IP? This has no real connection with Zorro, the character, right? You could have just as easily made this Robin Hood 2.0. Like, there's no reason why it couldn't be.
I think it does, though. That's the thing. So Alex Rivera, who is the person who has been signed on to direct and maybe write this, he's known for doing films about labor and immigration and politics. And when you go back and you look at Zorro, the Antonio Banderas one, it deals with labor and immigration and politics. More the labor and politics side of it and the disparity between the upper crust and the everyman.
The poor,
Yeah, and so that's what Zorro's about, and that's what this director does. And so I get doing an undocumented Oscar de la Vega.
I get that, and that sounds that I can understand, except for the fact that the synopsis doesn't really seem to give any implication that has anything to do with what the story actually is. And maybe it's just because it's a bad synopsis, right? Maybe the synopsis is not accurate in reflecting what the movie is, but it feels to me like this is just generic little guy versus the machine, little guy versus the system, right? It's the little guy who has some sort of hacking ability. V for Vendetta is the same story. Like that's the thing that's hitting me. Robin Hood, you could argue, is very much similar in that because it's all about the class division between the rich and the poor. So again, like it could easily just as be like Robin Hood 2.0 to me. Now, if they do make this where it has closer ties with the spirit of Zorro, maybe, but like, it's hard for me to look at this as anything other from a meta standpoint as a kind of cynical grab for a recognizable IP to exploit.
I mean, I get that. I also understand why they went with Zorro instead of Robin Hood, because Robin Hood probably would not have immigration issues.
I don't know. Did you see the Kevin Costner movie? I mean, there was like a lot of subtext going on there.
I mean, it's been so long and I've blocked most of it out. But the thing is, I do agree. It feels like they're trying to push too many things together. It feels very sucker punch in that arena where it's like, okay, Zorro, you've got this, you know, political or socio message you want to give, which is fine. You've got this action adventure kind of fantasy piece that you want to give, which is fine. And then you're also trying to make it a sci-fi. And I feel like at least the two, like the fantasy and the sci-fi genre, like the historical fantasy and the sci-fi genre is kind of, that's where I get hung up.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, so. You know, it's definitely unfair for me to judge this before there's anything to really judge, right? Like, mm-hmm. It may turn out that when I see the first, thanks, Tybalt. It may turn out that when I see the first trailers for this, I end up saying, wow, I was totally wrong. This looks awesome. So I will try and maintain a level of optimism and look forward to this. In the meantime, we need to look forward to our next segment where we will talk about a couple of other news stories that inspired the mashup we're going to gift to you, our audience.
All right, so we're back, and the couple other news items we wanted to talk about is, I guess the first one is that Stephen Sondheim passed away this past week.
Yep, he, at the ripe old age of 91, for those who are not big musical fans, Sondheim was one of the pivotal lyricists and composers in American musical theater over the last half century. Having written stuff like he wrote content for another A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, West Side Story, Sweeney Todd, Company, Into the Woods, tons and tons of very important and very beloved musical theater pieces, a lot of which end up kind of being a way of looking at the human condition in a pretty stark light.
Mm-hmm. And you know, he was 91. It's not that anyone expected him to live forever, but you know, it was still sad. So many people in New York, it gave me anxiety with how many people gathered in Broadway to give him like an outdoor musical tribute goodbye, which is very touching.
And probably just the first of many that we will see dedicated to Sondheim. I mean, there were multiple massive specials that were thrown on Sondheim's birthday where like the creme de la creme of musical theater would gather together. You would have multiple people who had played the same role join on stage to duet together. Like it was a big, big deal. So I'm sure we're going to see a lot more tributes for Stephen Sondheim. So that's the sad side of our news that will inform our mashup. But there's another one that, I mean, at least for me, was happy news.
I mean, it is happy, which is that Sony and Marvel are going to continue to play nice. They had mentioned the other day, but specifically in continuing to have Tom Holland as Spider-Man. I know Jonathan and I both said we'd like a Miles Morales, but Tom Holland makes a really good Spider-Man. So with multiverses, it doesn't have to be one or the other. I'm excited to continue to see him play the role.
Yeah. And I think Tom Holland was kind of playing it down a little bit because there was the possibility that, you know, No Way Home was going to be the final on-screen appearance of that incarnation of Spider-Man. But I also get the feeling that he genuinely loves playing that part. So my hope is that he still very much loves it, that that's something he looks forward to, and that this isn't I need to take this opportunity while I'm still able to take it. I hope it's still I got to take this opportunity because I love doing it so much. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah. As far as other crossovers for Spider-Man into other Sony films, the only thing that the studio exec would say is we all want to keep making movies together. How's that for an answer? So not much of an answer.
Not an answer.
It's not.
But that means that those two news stories are what inspired Ariel to come up with what might be my favorite proposal for a mashup. I'm not saying it's my best one. I'm saying it might be my favorite suggestion for a mashup we've ever had.
Certainly not my best one, but it's Spider-Man meets Into the Woods. Into the Woods is a story about the baker and the baker's wife in a fairy tale world who want to have a baby, and Cinderella who wants to have all of these fairy tale characters who want to have happy endings, and the witch that kind of messes it up. And it's kind of a a bittersweet story about how sometimes the thing you think you want to get is not the thing that's actually going to make you happy. Be careful what you wish for. Be careful what you're willing to give up.
Yeah. So like the first act is essentially a fun send up of fairy tales. And the second act is kind of a deconstruction, that mm-hmm. examination of, okay, you got what you wanted. Now what? And so you often see the first act performed as one act in high schools that don't want to tackle how dark the second act can get. But it's a interesting show, and it's one of Sondheim's probably best known. I mean, the fact that Disney made an adaptation helped a lot as far as people recognizing the work. Though Disney also did kind of a butcher job on the musical, in my opinion. Okay. Now we have our Spider-Man and Into the Woods mashups. And since mine is super long, I figure, Ariel, you should go first, and then we'll take another quick break, and then I'll warm up the pipes for mine.
Sounds good. All right. So mine is called Spiders in the Sky.
Oh, I love the title.
Thank you. It's a spoof on Giants in the Sky for people who are not familiar with Into the Woods. All right. A baker and his wife, Ben and May, lived in a fairy tale land. But despite it being a fairy tale land, none of its inhabitants were happy. And that was the same for the baker and his wife. You see, they wanted a child, but they had been plumb out of luck in getting their bun in the oven. A nosy witch overheard their distress and showed up, telling them it's her fault that they are cursed to not have a child, but that she can fix it if they can bring her a cow as white as milk, a cape as red as blood, hair as yellow as corn, and a slipper as pure as gold. So the baker and his wife set off to do that. However, what they don't know is that upon getting all of these items, it would curse the giver because the witch was being a big old spiteful meanie head. So off they set, with a spring in their step and a song on their tongue, to get their baby-making ingredients. First, the cow. They found a young dumb boy named Jack who had such a cow. Now, Jack didn't want to give up the cow, but they'd tricked him by trading some magic beans for it, and Jack begrudgingly parts with his bovine. But that night, when Jack plants the beans, and then the next morning when he wakes up and there's a giant beanstalk, he decides to climb it because he's a big dumb boy, and he turns into a big green giant who smashes everything. Jack is now cursed. Next, they find a young girl with a cape as red as blood. She's on the way to her grandma's house. They take her cape from her, which is all kind of mean, and also difficult because the cape has this life of its own, but finally they subdue it and leave. The little girl, Little Red, gets so upset that her cry opens a portal to the multiverse and she falls through. Now Little Red is cursed and also stuck in the multiverse. Next, they find a slipper of pure gold on a palace. They didn't know it belonged to Cinderella, but hey, free slipper, so they take it. Unfortunately, since this slipper was key to Cinderella's transformation, without it, she turned into an iron woman being locked in a suit of armor so the prince would not be able to see her face. Now Cinderella is cursed. And lastly, so if you're following, that's the Hulk and Doctor Strange and Iron Man. Okay. Lastly, they find an ear of corn from a passing old man. They take it from him because they find out that hair is not actually hair. I'm skipping some bits of the Into the Woods story, but that's fine. Anyhow, they trade the hair for corn, and they feed the corn and the slipper and the cloak all to this cow to get some magical milk or something to both give the baker's wife a child and also give the witch back her beauty and her youth. But little did they know there were some magical spiders on the corn because fairy tale lands are notorious for infestations. So when the baker's wife drank it and finally had her baby had spider powers. So now the baker's wife was also cursed. And if you question it, that last one, don't, because do you know how hard it is to raise a child with spider powers? Anyhow, they do it and they name their child Peter. So the inhabitants are more sad than ever and begin missing their old lives. All except Peter, who loves his spider powers and uses them to stop ogres and giants and saber-toothed tiger guys and stuff, to be a friendly fairy tale spider hero. Then one day, when Peter is a teenage boy, like Jack was once before he got turned into a big green hulking thing, the girl who fell into the multiverse, now not so Little Red, pops up and says that she has seen how sad everyone is and how to fix it to return them to their old lives. They must combine their cursed powers to defeat the witch, which will restore their timeline to what it once was, bringing them all back to the way they were before. So all the cursed inhabitants join their cursed powers together to do just that. All except Peter, who doesn't want to change. So he slips through Little Red's portal and finds himself in a new land with giants in the sky. Skyscrapers. New York. He makes a life there for himself and finds that fighting normal crime over magical fairy crime is so much easier. But high school? High school is way harder. The end.
Well done.
Thank you.
I was like, wow, Jack's turned into the Jolly Green Giant. But no, it was the Hulk.
It was the Hulk. I mean, also the Jolly Green Giant.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fairy tale Hulk.
Some peas in there too. Okay. Well, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I will give you my mashup and then I'll spend the rest of the time apologizing. Okay, Ariel. My mashup is long, and I apologize for that. I haven't actually timed it out yet, but I think it is the longest one I've ever written. and it's called, of course, to be fair, and spoiler alert, there are lyrics in this one. Lyrics can make a document much longer because, you know, it's short lines and I got like 1.5 spacing and stuff. This is called Spider-Man Turn Off the Woods. Peter Parker has a problem. See, everything gone done messed up because Mysterio totally let the spider cat out of the spider bag by revealing to the world that Peter Parker is Spider-Man. But beyond that, Parker is a world that's kind of like his own, but also kind of different. Things don't work quite the way he remembers them. Like, J. Jonah Jameson is there, and he's totes the same dude as appeared in a totally different Spider-Man movie, y'all. So Parker, desperate to escape a world where everyone is after him, either because they have a grudge against Spider-Man or they want to help him in some way, rushes off to see Doctor Strange, and he convinces Strange to use his mystical powers to reset the universe. You know, give it a little reboot, so to speak, so that Parker can maintain a secret identity and not bring danger to himself and those he loves. Strange, Doctor Strange, sympathetic to Parker, and also really familiar with him because they always go on press tours together, agrees. So, Strange says to Peter, "I can open up a portal to the verse." "The verse?" asked Peter. "Like poetry or something?" "Well, you're not far off," says Strange. "But no, verse is short for multiverse. Trust me, it's going to be all the rage in this phase." Peter nods like he understands what Strange is saying. "I'll warn you, though," says Strange, "we might encounter some old foes as we do this. You have to be prepared for anything when you go into the verse." Strange then casts a spell, and there's this weird humming noise, and you get one of those cool portals with the orange border on it, and they jump through, and when they do, they appear in downtown New York. And the weirdest thing happens. People all around them stop in their tracks, and the music from nowhere and everywhere strikes up. And then the people start singing. "Into the verse we gotta go, we don't have Miles Morales though. Into the verse we gotta go with Disney and with Sony. Into the verse we'll make a change with our weird buddy Doctor Strange. Into the verse and off the range. Into the verse and without Wanda. Into the verse with Sinister Six, with Uncle Ben and with Jonah Jameson. Into the verse, into the verse, into the verse to the MCU and there's no way home." So Peter looks at Doctor Strange and he says, "This ever happened to you before?" And Strange just kind of shrugs. He looks kind of baffled. But before the two can even gather their thoughts, they hear this huge explosion and they quickly run off to find out what happened. And they turn a corner and they see emerging from a bank a man with 4 giant robotic arms extending out of his back, each holding a massive bag of cash. And he grins as he leaves and bounds off down the street. Overhead, a cackling reveals the presence of a man dressed in weird green armor riding on what looks like a hovering platform of some sort. And then lightning strikes, except it's not just lightning, it's a person. And he's also coming out of the bank. And yeah, Peter and Strange have stumbled upon members of the Sinister Six, and they are from other movie versions of Spider-Man 2. And Strange looks at Peter, who feels kind of weird, and soon Peter finds himself singing. Now and then, Uncle Ben said the same thing time and again. He always had the same advice, and you'll hear it now twice. 'Cause with great power comes responsibility like you've never had before. You can beat Bonesaw in a no-holds-barred match. You can trounce Doc Ock without getting one scratch. And you can find out your best buddy is your archenemy, Natch. And I know things now, many valuable things that I hadn't known before. When you cannot see, you must turn off the dark. You must face the bad guys without Tony Stark. But you'll get lots of new suits, each with its own trademark. Now I know at this hour that though I have this great power, that I must not be dull. I must be responsible. Strange says, this is too weird even for me. I'm out. Call me when you're out of the woods, Parker. And with that, Strange opens up this portal thingy and he vanishes. So Peter rushes off into an alley and he quickly changes into his Spider-Man costume. You know, the one for this movie, which is at least slightly different from the ones from the other movies so that we can sell more toys. And then he tries to catch up with the fleeing villains. And catch up he does. He finds them taking up residence in a severely damaged skyscraper. And Parker is amazed to see that it is the former Avengers and thus former Stark Tower. He quietly sneaks up to see what is going on. And inside, he sees the Vulture and Mysterio and Sandman and Doc Ock and the Green Goblin and Electro and also the Lizard, because this is the Sinister Six, but it has seven members in it. And music swells and the Vulture sings, "Here's to the Sinister Six, everybody quake. A hodgepodge of rogues and total dicks who don't get a fair shake." "Hey," shouts Electro, "that's from the wrong musical." "Yeah," says Green Goblin, "we don't have the rights to that Sondheim show." "Sorry," says Vulture, "I just figured I was in good company." And everyone groans at Vulture's terrible, terrible dad joke. At least everyone who loves musical theater and gets the reference groans. Suddenly, the Lizard perks up, turns his head, and stares right at Spider-Man, who's hiding off behind a window. And he hisses, and now all the bad guys see Spider-Man there. "Well, well, well, Peter," says Doc Ock. "Glad you could show up. We've been waiting." "She's been waiting." "She?" says Spider-Man. And then he sees Sandman pulling out a young woman from the shadows into the light. A young woman Peter doesn't recognize at all. "If you even think about trying to stop us, I can promise you your precious Gwen Stacy has seen the last of her days," says Doc Ock. "Gwen," says Spider-Man. Peter, run for it," yells Gwen. But here's the thing. See, this Peter Parker doesn't know a Gwen Stacy, but that's totes who this is. Anyway, there's this weird orange glitch moment where Peter apparently gets a hint of his alternate universe self and realizes that another Peter Parker in another universe actually loved this woman. And before he can say anything, Sandman says, "I'm bored," and shoves her out a window. So Peter dives after her, falling from the top of Stark Tower, and he uses his webbing to grab hold of her, and then he grabs the side of the building, but this stop makes Gwen jerk in an unnatural way, and horrified, Peter lowers himself to the ground with the now limp young woman. "Did I not catch her and rescue the girl? Why does she lay so still? I am the hero who swings and who whirls. She really can't be so chill. Agony that I let Stacy slip when I thought I could catch her as my wrist webs went thwip. Before he can continue, his spidey sense tells him that the villains are descending upon him. And then we get this massive fight between Spider-Man and the Sinister Six set to the music of U2. And then Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man shows up and he starts to help out. And then Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man shows up and he starts to help out. And then Spider-Ham shows up and he starts to help out. Soon it's like the entire multiverse of Spider-Man is there and they're all working together to stop the Sinister Six plus one. And the fight is pretty spectacular, but it's also kind of messy and overdone the way Marvel movies typically end. And then there's this tender moment where Tobey Maguire, or maybe it was Andrew Garfield. Anyway, they mourn the loss of Gwen Stacy. I can't remember which movie she was in. But then Doctor Strange shows up again. Hey, Peter, I figured it out. Like, I totally turned my hand counterclockwise when I should have done it clockwise. It was my bad. Well, the various Peters all look at Strange at the same time. Wow, says Strange. That is creepy. But then there's a flash of orange light, and Peter is back in Times Square, and no one is singing or dancing, and everyone's miserable. I think I fixed it, says Strange. So Peter hugs Dr. Strange because, you know, Peter's a hugging kind of guy, and far off in the distance, he hears someone saying something a little strange. A Peter on the roof. Sounds crazy, no? But here in our little village of Manhattan, you might say every one of us is a Peter on the roof. The end.
That was delightful, wonderful, everything I
epic.
Want.
Epic is epic. The word I would describe.
It's epic. I'm going to keep the playbill and frame it.
I tried to throw as many little Easter eggs for both musical lovers and Spider-Man lovers in there as I could.
And by that, you mean all of them. And it was brilliant. Well done, my friend.
I mean, like, you give me a musical and I'm going to have to write some parody songs. And the first one I thought of was The Ladies Who Lunch, which isn't even from Into the Woods. It's from Company. But mm-hmm. It was a Sondheim song that immediately I was like, here's to the Sinister Six. such a dumb joke.
It was hilarious. I loved it. And if you loved it as much as I did, you should write us and tell us.
And if you didn't, keep it to yourself.
Yes. Or you can write us and give us your own version of a Spider-Man Sondheim Into the Woods mashup. Or tell us about any of the things that you'd like us to talk about, your opinions about things we have talked about. We love hearing from you.
Yes, you can send us an email, lnc@iheartmedia.com, or you can drop us a line on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. On Facebook and Instagram, we're Large Nardron Collider. Over on Twitter, we're lnc_podcast. Also, if you really want to learn about a crazy Spider-Man musical, you should definitely research Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, because the making of that and the behind the scenes drama is itself more epic than any musical you could ever produce on stage.
That is true. That is true. Also, if you like our show, you should tell your friends about it, leave a review, subscribe, share the episodes. All of that is very helpful so that we can have more geeks to geek out with.
Yes. And keep those suggestions coming. We've got some good ones that we're going to be doing in upcoming episodes that we have planned, but we love getting these. And remember, picking stuff that's not inherently similar to each other, that helps a lot. If it's two things that are really kind of similar already, it's sort of hard to make a funny mashup or even a mashup. Yeah. I'm not even going to argue that all of mine are funny. Some of them are really not.
You know, it goes, you can't all be winners. They can't all be winners.
Yeah. Well, I guess that means it's time for us to wrap up. So until next time, I'm Jonathan Hobgoblin Strickland.
And I am Ariel to Grandmother's House, Kasten.
The Large Nerdron Collider is a production of iHeartRadio and was created by Ariel Kasten. Jonathan Strickland is the executive producer. The show is produced, edited, and published by Tari Harrison. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.